The Autoplug Podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. This is episode number 384 of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm joined this week by Chris Parker and Stephen Ewing, and we talk about rumors that the Subaru WRX concept styling may make it to production for the next generation, the Chevrolet Corvette Z06, and Chris's review of the Lincoln MKC. That's all ahead on episode number 384 of the Autoblog Podcast. Starts now. Hello, welcome to the Autoblog Podcast. I am Dan Roth. I'm joined this week by Chris Parker.
Good evening.
And Stephen Ewing.
Hello.
So let's hit the garage. And I know that we are going to continue our Mercedes streak because, Chris, you're driving a Mercedes-Benz E550 Cabrio, or you just stepped out of one.
Yeah, it just left the office today. And it's been a very pleasurable week. I think I could use a little bit of a break, and I'm turning into a bit of an old man. But it's been a super relaxing week with the great weather and the top down, and the air management system on this thing is pretty tremendous for cold weather.
Air scarf, right? Air scarf.
There's air scarf. There's air cap, which
is air cap.
Air cap is the little wing that comes up at the top of the windshield,
right.
And it's something that's defeatable, and at the same time you activate the air cap, you also get the rear headrests and the little wind blocker behind it that raise up a little bit in an integrated fashion. And if you are foolish enough to keep the side glass up, as I did sometimes when I had a passenger and wanted to talk to them, it's a pretty comfortable place even when it's a chilly night. You've got air scarf blowing warm air on your neck, and you've got a seat heater, and it's really a great four-season car.
You know what helps? A roof. It keeps you nice and warm. You don't have to build a fire in the back seat. You're good.
Yeah, but then you miss out on the great noises and the stars and the smells, and it's awesome.
You know what? What you could do is just get a Rolls-Royce Wraith, and then you're not missing out on the stars.
That's true.
You could spray some of your like Rolls-Royce cologne inside the car.
Or you could just get the yellow little tree and go from there. Vanilla aroma. So it's an E550 though, so that means it has some flavor of V8.
It does. It has a twin turbo 4.7 in it, and it goes. I'm willing to bet that 0 to 60 is under 5 in this car, and this isn't even an AMG, but it hauls. It's got over 400 horsepower, and it's got, I think, almost 450 foot-pounds of torque, and that comes in early and often, and it's a super easy to drive car. I mean, if you want to totter around, with one hand on the wheel, which is not my style, you can completely kind of old man it around in your penny loafers and your Tommy Bahama shirts, or you can get on it a little bit. The steering feel is not really there, but it corners nice and flat, and it makes a pretty good noise when you kick it in the pants. And it's a fun car.
So does it feel flimsy, or does it have
no,
that Mercedes?
No, it's got that rock solid solidity. They did an update on it for last year, I believe. And they did, basically the front clip, which I think looks a ton better. I know we've had some back and forth discussions among the Autoblog staff about which they believe looks better. I think the new front end looks much, much better.
I do, too.
And I think they've updated the technology inside a little bit. If you really want to get nitpicky, the navigation screen's a little bit small and all that. And certainly the price tag is nothing to sniff at. But this is a really nice, super comfortable car. I have a weakness for pillarless Mercedes coupes and convertibles. And I could see wanting to grow old with this car.
What is the price tag on it? It's an E550 Cabrio, so I'm guessing it's going to be like a lot, like 70?
More than that.
Really?
Yeah, so it's the base price on an E550 is $67,300, and that's before delivery. So it's basically the $64,000 question before you add you know, Napa leather, which is 1370. There's a wooden leather wheel. There's heated and ventilated front seats. There's keyless go. There's a rear spoiler, which I would be happy to not spend the $350 to get. And then there's the navigation bundle, lighting bundle, sport visuals, et cetera, et cetera.
Sport visuals?
Well, it's the sports pack. So it comes with a sports wheel and pedals and multi-contour front seats.
Oh, well, the seats are nice. That's probably worth the whole price of the package right there.
Yeah, it probably is. And then there's all the driver assistance stuff, blind spot assist and all that, which actually works fairly well, for a grand total of $81,615.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money for a mid-sized Mercedes.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, frankly, you still can't really use the back seat for very long. I'm 5'9". And I set up the seat the way I would, and then I crawled into the back. And while I could sit back there for a little while, the back end is pretty bolt upright, and there's no toe room to speak of. And you've got a weird thing where you're sitting a little bit inboard of the sort of the cutouts in the back of the seat. Because
you got to clear the C-pillar assembly thing there.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's not terribly comfortable back there. I mean, you'd be fine for a parade. You'd be fine for a short trip someplace. But it's not something you can really luxuriate in the back. So I'm looking forward to seeing the new forthcoming S-Class convertible.
So it's kind of like sitting in the back of an old LeBaron convertible, is what you're saying?
It is not at all like that. For one thing, you're not watching the cowl shake back and forth.
Right. You know, and then like opposite
like
the way.
6 inches to either side. Yeah.
So it's obviously not a utility car. I'm sure the trunk is kind of tiny. So like, what's the value proposition here? Like, is it?
The value proposition, honestly, is you have made it. And you want to spend a little money on yourself, and it's a legitimate, you know, four season car. It's got a nice top. It's got all the things I mentioned earlier for driving in cool weather with the top down. So it's about spoiling yourself. It's about relaxing. I mean, as I said, it'll get up and go when you want it to. But I had a really rough travel week just before with a trip to California, and it was the nicest thing to just hop into and just sort of tool around. It was great.
Now, is that car 4MATIC? I think the 550 sedan is.
You can get a coupe that's the 4MATIC. I don't believe you can get a 550 cab that's automatic.
Okay.
That's 4MATIC, yes. Yeah.
If you could get 4MATIC on any of the Cabrios, like 350 or 550.
I think they were going to do that in the past couple of years. This one's not.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's the 4MATIC Cabrio. It seems like one of those things. It's funny. The last time I had a BMW 3 Series Cabrio, one of the guys that I was working with really wanted them to make an xDrive 3 Series Cabrio, who's like, that would be the perfect car, but you can either get the Cabrio or you can get the 3 Series with xDrive.
Well, and BMW's added xDrive to the 4 Series Cabrio now.
Right. This was a few years ago, yeah.
So, right, and I mean, you know, Audi with the A5 S5 has Quattro standard.
Yeah, I was going to blame Audi for all of that, but, you know, the reality is it makes it a 4 Season car.
Right.
Yeah. And like, convertible people are really, like, they love their convertibles. There was a guy that I work with. He just left a couple of weeks ago, but he's had two Solara convertibles. He loves that thing. He's like,
wow.
You know, the minute the sun is out and it's like above 40 degrees, bam, top is down. It's just, I mean,
which is not the way most Solara drivers do it, I imagine.
No. Convertible people are really into that thing, you know?
Yeah, yes, I am.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you are a convertible. We have a Viggen convertible as well. So, I mean, we know.
And a Miata convertible, yeah.
Yes. I always wanted them to make like a Miata fastback coupe, like an MGB kind of, the MGB GT.
That'd be cute.
That would be awesome.
That would be really cool.
They made like a fiberglass kind of add-on thing for the first gen.
There's been the thinnest wisp of a rumor of model line extensions for the next Miata, so you never know, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah. Well, all right. So, Steve, are you going to let us down easy, or are you driving something equally as ostentatious.
I have something quite ostentatious. I am driving the 2014 Chevy Corvette Stingray. It's the coupe, and it's kind of a convertible because you can take off the roof panel, which I mean, the weather's been gorgeous. So I think the only time that I drove it with the roof affixed was when I picked it up from the airport after getting home and it was raining. But I mean, all while it's nice, I've just had the roof off because it's pretty pleasant to do so. But I mean, when you say ostentatious, this thing, it's the Velocity yellow, and it's got the carbon fiber mirrors and rear spoiler, and it's got the black gloss wheels, or black aluminum wheels. Sorry. So it looks awesome. This one, though, so, you know, the whole thing about the Corvette is how it's relatively, you know, inexpensive. The starting price is just over 53 grand. But this one has, I'm looking at the Monroney right now, it's got two full columns of options on the Monroney. So, like, it's got, so it's a 3LT, which is the highest trim. It's got the Z51 pack, which has all the performance goodies. But then it's got stuff like, the roof panel is carbon fiber, so that's $2,000. It's got magnetic ride control, which is $1,795. Performance exhaust for $1,200. Carbon fiber interior for $1,000. That yellow paint is $1,000. Microfiber wrapped upper trim package is $1,000.
You know what you sound like right now, Steve? You sound like, oh, you're probably too young to remember. I bet Chris remembers, though.
You're going with a game show, aren't you?
I am.
You're going with the Wheel of Fortune.
I am, when they used to have the carousel thing.
Yeah. And for $99, I'll take the Dalmatian or whatever it was.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Like the porcelain Dalmatian, yeah. Like right next to the old Wurlitzer jukebox.
Right. Right after you took the $700 answering machine.
Yeah. And the new car was always
which was the size of a coffee table and had wood grain on it to boot.
And yeah. So that's what you sound like, Steve.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could go on and on, but at the very base bottom bold number that I'm looking at here is $71,960.
Hey, it's still less than an E-Class convertible.
Less than an E-Class convertible, and it's great. I mean, this is the Z51, so I think it's 455 horsepower, 460 pound-feet, I believe, and 7-speed manual, which is perfect. It's got the it's so weird when you get in because the rev match like on off switch are paddles on the shifter, yeah, or on the steering wheel,
on the steering column,
on the steering column. So you've got paddles with a manual transmission, but the way the rev match thing works is I was sort of confused by it for a minute. I was like, okay, so wait, do I have to like push this when I want it to do it? No, it's just an on off switch. It's like each paddle is an on off toggle for the rev match system.
I imagine that must have had to confuse the hell out of spy shooters at first.
Yeah, I can't understand why it's done like that. It's just really weird.
Because when you're in the middle of a turn, maybe, and you want a rev match, I don't know.
You probably shouldn't be switching to rev match.
Right, but then would you not want a rev match anymore after that turn? Like, it's just weird that it's, you know, it's not just a button somewhere. It's actually designed as paddles onto the steering wheel, and they're not even like good paddles, and they both say rev match. It's just an odd little quirk for the car. But the 7-speed manual is great. I really, really enjoy it. It's interesting, though. I mean, the amount of times I've had to use 7th gear are really, really few and far between. I mean, that's like a, you know, 75 mile an hour and above cruising on the freeway only. Otherwise, you're just revving way too low. And, you know, in those cases, it's kind of weird to be, you know, you're on the freeway in this Corvette and you're doing, 75 and you're in 7th gear and the engine is just barely spinning. It's kind of neat, but then the engine's super powerful, but the moment you need more out of 7th, you've got to downshift at least to 5th. But it's a nice shifter. It's, you know, good clutch. Everything else is great about the car. I really, really like driving it. I'm not as
of
you guys
course
know.
You like driving it.
Well, yeah,
455 horsepower.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I mean, you know, you guys both know this about me, and our listeners by now should sort of know this. I'm not really like a muscle car kind of person.
But
you know,
it's not a muscle really car.
That's right. That's the thing car. Is, it's not a muscle car. It's a sports car. The previous Corvettes still had that sort of muscly thing to it because the interior sucked. And
I don't know, man. I was rather smitten with the C6.
The C6 was very good.
That was a hell of a
C6 Z06 was like
with a replacement seat was excellent.
Yeah, it was so good. But man, the C7 is just it's so good to drive. It makes the best noise. It looks outstanding. Some people that I was showing it to still find that design to be a little too much. I was talking with a coworker today, and he's like, God, I hate the back end of that thing so much. And a lot of people really don't like the back end, but everyone thinks the profile is gorgeous. The front's gorgeous, you know.
See, and I'm the opposite. I have other than the exhaust, I have no trouble with the back end, but the front still looks a little like a pastiche to me.
I think the car looks good all around. I've warmed up to the back end. I didn't love it at first, especially in photos. But when you see it on the ground, I was actually I had met up with Brandon this weekend, and I was following him, and he was in the Corvette, and I was behind him in a Camaro, and just watching the Corvette like from behind it, you're like, God, that is a good looking car. I really dig it, and you know. The big thing people have been comparing it to, and I believe, Chris, when you reviewed the Corvette, you even say this, how, you know, the car is really doing like Porsche 911 level ability these days.
Oh, yeah. For a lot less money.
Oh, right, I think so it's probably higher. Yeah,
totally. So, you know, I'm looking at this option sheet and everything. And I mean, you can't get a good 911 for 71 grand.
No. You can't get a 911 for 71.
Right. Well, there's that, too. But
It's still a steal, even if you option it up with all the visual accoutrement that you have. Yeah, I wouldn't do that, but it's a steal and a half either.
But it's such like for the it's not even a good car for the money. I mean, it is, but it's just a good car. It's a really good car, and I'm like actually really sad that it's being picked up tomorrow. But c'est la vie.
Well, I'm glad to see it still seems like it's selling well. And we've already gotten word of the 2015 details and some of the new colors and options and such that I think it's cool that they're continuing to push that car forward a little bit.
8-speed automatic for, you know, folks that don't want to row their own now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, it's, you know, the thing about the 8-speed automatic too, is they say it's going to be as quick as PDK. So
I think they said even quicker, which is incredible.
Which would be great. I mean, cause PDK is really
super
good.
Quick. Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be fun to try.
Yeah, I really like the Corvette. I'm kind of smitten with it.
You know, instead of a Gallant, you can get me one of those.
The Corvette?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? What's really cool about your request there is
it's this never gonna happen.
This one, I know, but I could actually do this.
I know. Well,
the problem with getting you a Gallant, Dan, is that you are far closer to your local rental company.
I know. Your answer was the best. Like, even when they were still making it, I was like, when can I get a Gallant? And you were like, you can get one anytime.
Go to the airport.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet I could still get one.
You probably can.
So, yeah, I'm not driving any kind of really high-end machinery, although it is the top trim level.
Oh, yeah, you're in – I know what you're in.
Yeah, I'm in it because I hated this thing the first 2 days I had it. I've got a 2014 Jetta SEL. I've come to terms with it. Actually, it has its high points.
You've warmed up to the thing because you were pretty mad.
I wasn't. Let's be frank here. Getting a brand new car to drive for a week is sweet.
Right. It
doesn't really matter what it is.
No, that's totally
but some
true.
Weeks are better than others.
Right. Some are better than others. And the Jetta SEL is not the Jetta for me. Just overall, it's a $27,000 car.
Ooh.
Yeah. Doesn't have leather, which is okay because the leatherette is pretty nice. The MB Tex.
Yeah, MB Tex.
That's VW Tex. Thank you.
It's always MB Tex.
Yeah, it's got the DSG, which in a Jetta, I feel like you need to have the manual. I just feel that way. The DSG is a good gearbox, sort of. It still does some of the things. It's the smoothest sort of dual clutch automatic. They've really worked it out, but still.
Is it the 1.8T?
It is the 1.8T. Very good engine. Holy crap, does it have mid-range punch? It's just like, it's a tiny engine, and the numbers are like, it's, you know, 170 horsepower, 184 foot-pounds of torque, but like, you punch it to pass somebody on the highway, and it pulls really hard. Very impressive.
I guess I just, for like that price point in the Jetta, I mean,
you're getting a GLI.
Right, you're getting a GLI with the better suspension, better interior, the more powerful, the 2.0T, which is a great engine. Or, I mean, if you're not into that sort of thing, like, the Jetta TDI is a very respectably good car. I mean, you know, it's also got a ton of power, it's super efficient, and it's got all the same stuff.
Yeah.
I don't really see the argument for the SEL with the 1.8T, especially at that price point, because it's like, you know, you can go the TDI direction, which is actually less expensive, or you can go the GLI direction, which is basically the same amount of money.
Or you could even go the hybrid version and shoot yourself in the face.
Yeah, please don't ever go
the
hybrid.
Which is about the same price.
A hybrid with a turbo.
No, the hybrid is like super expensive, actually.
I think it starts at 27 something.
Yeah, but I mean,
which you said it's 28. You're the one you have.
Right, but I remember
this one's 27.
I had a Jetta hybrid.
So did I. You know what? It sucks.
But the thing is, the one I had was like, it was the $28,000 one, but it had like 15-inch wheels. It had nothing inside. Like, I'm serious, the 15s.
Yeah,
it had nothing inside. It was just, it was like the worst option Jetta I ever had, and I was like, this thing is how much money?
Yeah, it's a hybrid. I don't understand the argument for, well, I do actually understand the argument for the Jetta hybrid because they want to sell Jettas.
But that's not doing it. So they've got four different basic models with five engines, including a hybrid and a diesel,
mm-hmm.
and their numbers still aren't great.
You know, it's probably expensive to make it with all those engines too. Like, the 1.8T, like, the engine is the least of my problems with this car. It just feels really mushy. It's kind of like, this feels like the perfect car if you want a Camry, but you still want to fancy yourself as like a car guy, right? Because like Volkswagen has some of that mystique that they've managed to generate for themselves.
Wouldn't that be a Passat anyway?
Okay, right. So a Corolla. But the Corolla's kind of smaller.
Man, I'm looking at
smaller.
A Jetta GLI starts at 24 and a half.
Totally, like the GLI or the TDI would be the one that I went for. And because the things that I like about this car, like, it feels solid. It's like looking around, it's well built. Like, it's a, and I know everybody complained about the, you know, this is the only for us Jetta. It still feels pretty darn good on the road. And I don't really have any complaints about assembly quality or, you know, the design. I think it looks pretty good. You know, it's not overly ornamental, which I think is nice.
It still has that Germanic look, even though it's the built for America version, in that it's a simple design.
And it's a lot of car for the price. If we talk about, okay, you're competing with the Corolla, not the Camry, right? It's got a big back seat, a huge trunk, feels pretty good on the road. It will clip right along at extra legal velocity and feel very solid, even with the somewhat, the suspension is not as buttoned down as the GLI. So it rolls a bit in corners, and the tires are really, really, really underachievers. But it's the SEL. It's not supposed to be sporty. So,
sure. But can you build a $28,000 or $27,000 Corolla, by the way?
No,
you cannot get a Corolla up that expensive.
No.
Yeah. You probably can't get it anywhere near it.
But I mean, really, because like the first 2 days, like Steve will attest, I was like, just this car is just rawr. I was not pleased.
You were pretty hateful in my messages app.
But then I softened a bit, and I was like, you know, it does do that Volkswagen sort of solid, good driving thing. The suspension is well tuned, even though it's a little floatier than I'd like. And, you know, it does have some features, as the SEL should. I'm still a little offended that it's $27,000 and you have leatherette. That kind of bugs me.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty understandable that bothers you.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
So it's a decent car. It's just priced kind of high compared to the competition, because you can go, you can go cross shop and not necessarily exactly in the class, but at that price level at $27,000, there's a lot of choice.
Yeah, I just built a Corolla S Premium, which is, you know, the top flight model, 21,210.
Yeah, so the Corolla S actually has a less powerful engine than the regular Corolla. I forget exactly. There's the Corolla, if you read through the list of, I don't know, maybe it's the, like the high fuel economy one has more horsepower or something. I forget what it is. That's a weird car to like watch the options on when you go through it and configure it.
I mean, to be fair, there are cars in that class that can get up there. So something like a very nicely optioned Mazda 3 can easily do that. A Focus can easily do that.
Yeah. But I mean, at 27, though, in the Focus, you've got a lot of stuff and you've got better tech, even though it's, you know, that's kind of a polarizing thing, right? The MyFord Touch versus the Volkswagen tech is a little bit more basic. It's because it's more basic, it's easier to use. A lot of the stuff that they do here is very good. You know, the climate control is easy to use. Even, you know, you can turn it up and down without having to stab your finger at a touchscreen. It's, you know, it's a good driving car. It's just, it's not the Jetta for me. I'd go for the GLI or the TDI. I think those are the two that really would ring my bell. So you get it optioned, right? It's a decent car. As an SEL, it's not my thing. But it has stuff. If you're looking for stuff, I would be really.
That is a resounding endorsement.
I mean, I'd be really interested to drive it back to back with the Focus because, you know, the Focus is kind of the same thing where I'm not really that excited by it unless we're talking like ST. And then I'm, you know, going, well, Focus ST, and I'd rather have the Fiesta ST. You know, I don't know.
You're just all over the place, yeah, Dan.
I'm inconsistent at
There's
best.
Just no pleasing you.
That is true. That is true. So, all right.
Which is why I stopped trying so many years ago.
Chris,
I've given
it's
up
my
on you,
job
Dan.
As you know, as a freelancer for Autoblog, it's my job to please you as executive editor.
Well, we got to get you talking to some of the other freelancers.
There's simply no pleasing Chris.
Right. I'm just a terrible despot of
a tyrant, really.
I think, you know, as we've had our disagreements over, you know, professionally, we've been respectful and we've worked them out. And you know, I think we managed to act as adults, surprisingly.
I think so, for the most part.
Yeah, occasionally. All right. Well, that's the garage. Let's hit the topics. A couple of things happened this week. Before we get into the topics, one more thing about the garage.
We have a little surprise garage bit.
Yeah, Steve, you have an announcement.
I do have an announcement, which this is actually for our live audience. This is a preview of an announcement that will be made formally in the very near future. But we have another new long-term car to talk about, and this one is I feel like a parent trying not to play favorites with their children.
You know, I can tell you as a parent, you will occasionally have a favorite.
But I mean,
that's horrible.
It's kind of hard not for me to be all about this one just because of what it is. But we have just added a 2015 Subaru WRX to our long-term fleet, and it's darling. Love it.
That's what they say in the ads.
Yeah, it's
you know, right next to the Chevy Cruze ad, where it was like Lexus Quiet, in the WRX ad, you have Stephen Ewing Autoblog.
Well, I can tell you for a fact this is not Lexus Quiet, but
no.
So the one we got is we kind of had this debate back and forth about whether we should get WRX or STI, and I've always, you know, as much as I love the new STI, it's a really great car. It's a lot of fun to drive. I've always had this belief that at the end of the day, I'd rather just own the standard WRX. And while that's less so with the new STI, because it's actually more refined, it's quieter, it's more comfortable. I don't feel like I'm too old for the car anymore. I still would rather have a WRX.
I totally
every day,
agree
I
with
think.
You.
But I mean, we're gonna have this one now for the course of a year, so we'll be able to find out.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's the smart decision because it keeps the sticker price more relevant to our readers, and B, it allows us a year with the new 2-liter. STI continues on with the old 2.5.
I was just going to mention that, you know, it's got the brand new 2-liter engine. Well, it's not brand new. It's used in the Forester. But it's a new engine for the WRX. It's got a tiny bit more power than the old 2.5. It's only like 3 horsepower and then 14 pound-feet. And that's kind of, canceled out by the fact that the car's got an extra, I think it's like 60 pounds that it's carrying around now.
Yeah, but the nice thing about the 2-liter is where it has its extra power.
Right, like, that's the thing is, you know, this car, and this is what's weird, is I remember them saying, they're the Subaru people saying this on the launch, that the official 0-60 numbers, the new car is actually a like something like a tenth or 2/10 of a second slower, but they're claiming that the 5.4 seconds that the new car is rated at is like seriously underrated. And I've got to believe it, because this thing, I mean, I've driven the previous WRX extensively. This thing is quick. Like, yeah. This thing feels way, way quicker off the line than the old one did. And it's just because, you know, the 2 liter's power comes on so much lower in the rev range.
And it's so strong.
It is. It's really, really strong. I mean, so you're looking at it's 268 horsepower and 258 pound-feet of torque. But the 258 hits at 2 grand, and it holds that until over 5,000. So you've got this really strong power band in the car. And I mean, it's great. Like I had the WRX delivered late last week. So I had it at the same time as the Corvette. So I sort of felt like I was cheating on the Corvette a bit when I went to take the Subaru out. But I mean, you know, just as I was thinking about the Corvette, how you get the thing on the freeway and, you know, you've got a downshift from 7 to 6 to 5 to get it to go. This thing, the WRX, on the freeway, 6th gear, 70 miles an hour.
How do you just put it to the floor? It just goes.
You don't even have to put it to the floor. You just like hit the throttle as you normally would, and it just goes.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really good.
I drove like a jerk for the week I had WRX.
And the base price of that car is cheaper than the Jetta you have in your driveway.
Yeah, it is.
I will say, galling. Like the
totally
Jetta
different
is,
kind of car.
Yeah, the Jetta is definitely like more refined and more.
Yeah,
you know, relaxed.
Pretty much everything is still more refined. They did a nice job cleaning this car up in the inside and making it a little bit quieter without making it like a hyperbaric chamber.
It's a little quieter.
It's still not a great interior. It's still rough around the edges.
Right. The material
but
it
kind of should
be. I really like, though, and this is something I've liked about all the Imprezas, is the redesigned glass house of the car. The sight lines out of this thing are awesome. Like, the visibility is really, really good. So it kind of feels, you know, nice and open and spacious inside. The car we have, I'm just looking over my notes. The car we have as tested is 33,290, which includes the 795 for destination. But our car is pretty much loaded. It's got, you know, power sunroof, leather seats that are heated. It's got nav, all the infotainment stuff. The only option we didn't get is the CVT. We stuck with the 6-speed manual, but it's got the upgraded.
Kudos to you, sir.
Yeah, we had. You know what?
The manual in that car is good.
It is, but I will say this: in its credit, the CVT in the WRX is actually really good.
Yeah, because
really, is it really good for a CVT, or is it really good period? Because I've yet to drive that transmission.
No, it's really good period. It's a well. Have you driven the Forester with the CVT?
Briefly, and it was fine.
It's fine. So I guess if you can remember, just imagine it in like a lighter application. So the car is a little more powerful. For some reason, the CVT, I think it's because the power band on this thing is just so broad.
Well, that you don't ever have to push it that hard. Right. And you just sort of stay out of the rubber band.
Yeah. It's not working as hard as it is in other cars. It's not, it doesn't have those like just high revvy buzzy qualities. I'm serious. The CVT is a great transmission in this car. I still wouldn't have it over the manual ever, but it didn't feel like a punishment when I drove this car with the CVT. It still felt really good, really engaging, a nice car to drive. But for a year-long car, we had to get the stick.
Yeah, because
of course.
I mean, you got to get up and look at yourself in the mirror every day. And right. If you look at yourself and say, "I ordered a long-term WRX with an automatic."
With a CVT.
Right.
And you have to face the readers many, many times with this car. So.
Well, but you know, I would have to face every other person on staff that I give it to getting in the car and going, ah, you know.
But that's an interesting question, because there's still lingering, you know, a doubt on the internet, which is funny because we've had CVTs pretty thick in the market over the last 5 years. There's still people that aren't convinced that they're reliable and durable.
We've only recently started to see the higher horsepower and higher torque applications of these things.
Right.
So I think they're proving that they can not only be better, you know, more enjoyable to drive, but also handle those torque loads. But I don't know in the end how many enthusiasts you're going to win over, even though I have to say CVTs actually seem to really, really help on fuel economy.
Yes.
More than an 8 or a 9 speed automatic, even if the ratio spreads the same and all that. They just seem to do a better job of actually getting the, you know, eking out the miles per gallon.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
They're nowhere near as fun as shifting for yourself. And you get to evaluate how poorly some of us may drive a manual transmission when you have to deal with that crunch from first to second.
Yeah, the WRX is not an easy car to drive. It's a tough transmission. It's a heavy clutch. You know, it's a weird one.
Really?
The 1-2 throw, especially, yeah, it's a heavy clutch.
I had it in the snow, so I I don't know.
I've kind of tasked myself with doing the break-in miles on this thing, because it showed up with 30 on the odometer. So I've been trying to, like, you know, baby a little bit, then kind of push it around a little bit and just, you know, break the engine in nicely before I hand it off to the rest of my team.
See, that's not what they do with fleet vehicles, though. Or even at the dealer, you know, the techs get that brand new WRX off the thing, they go tearing up and down the street, and then somebody buys it. Yeah, it's a good time. All right, so following on that, actually, to get into our topics, because where's this car going? Is it going to stay up in Michigan, or is it going to go out to LA? Or
I don't know yet. I'd like to get it out to LA, but we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, good times. We'll have.
I'm going to drive it to Alaska.
Excellent. There you go, up the Alcan Highway.
In February.
That would be a really good story, Steve.
It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It would be a lot of fun.
The car
could do it.
It could do it. Might come back with a few scars.
It'd be a lot of fun if you came back.
Who don't we like? We can send them up. It'll be a lot of fun when they don't come back.
Yeah, but we need to have the podcast every week, Dan.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I have faith. It's the,
I would not be missed if I was gone.
That's
who
not true.
Who is going to host the podcast?
Who's going to get me a Gallant?
We'll get you a rental Gallant for the Alcan. Yeah.
You can follow me in the Gallant.
Yeah, probably a good story there. So, all right, the WRX concept. You guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
From New York back in March of 2013?
I do remember it.
Didn't it look awesome?
That thing was my desktop wallpaper for a long time.
So that's right, because it's that blue. And it's got, well, they're not gold, but they were like puke yellow wheels, and yeah, I could see that color combination really working for you, Steve.
Yeah, that car was my jam.
Yeah, how disappointed were you when they didn't?
Oh, extremely.
Yeah,
I mean, because that's the thing is, you know, I'm a huge WRX fan. I love that whole class, the small, you know, turbo, the hot hatch thing, even though I can't call the WRX a hot hatch anymore because it's a sedan only. But, you know, you see the WRX concept that came out, and it was bulgy, and it had these awesome fenders and the big scoop and the aggressive front end of those really angular, sharp headlamps. And it had this mean, powerful stance that you were like, oh, my gosh. But it followed in the footsteps of several other Subaru concepts where, you know, I've wrote about this several times, where Subaru has a habit of bringing out these really good looking concepts. And then you see the production car and you're like,
well, I mean, I will say that, like, the front end of this concept did influence the WRX that we just had. Like,
it did. It definitely
did. Well, do we
did.
Know that it influenced it, or do we think that maybe it came after they designed that car?
Oh, maybe.
Well, if you remember,
because sometimes that happens.
There was the Impreza concept that led up to the entire Impreza line.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it can't. I mean, I can see the similarities between the cars, obviously, especially in the front end and some of that sort of rear quarter thing. I just, you know, it's got that four-door coupe greenhouse thing that the rumor is that we're hearing some stuff from Motoring out of Australia, mm-hmm. that they're going to come up with a more exciting WRX for the next generation. Which, to me, sounds like a Cubs fan. you know. Just wait till next year. I'm not sold that this is going to happen, even though they're getting more capacity at their Indiana plant because their tie up with Camry Assembly is winding down, and Subaru, the rumor is, the actual reality is that they're developing a new platform that's more modular, which I think is what everybody's doing. And so Subaru is trying to stay current and have current, you know, production procedures that don't cost them too much money so they can sell their cars for actual profit. I'm not sold that we're going to see this ever.
I'm not either. History suggests we're not.
Yeah. We're not going to see this. I would love it if – I'll say this. I would rather Subaru spend any sort of like next-gen WRX development money. If you kept the car the same, I mean, the sort of the beauty of the WRX is that it's never been a pretty car. I mean, and I've talked to WRX owners and WRX enthusiasts, and they all kind of like the fact that the car is a little bit ugly. It's part of the charm. I personally would rather see, like, don't work so hard to make it aggressive and gorgeous and stuff. Bring back the frickin' hatchback. Like, really, that's what I want, is a hatch.
Yeah, I just can't see the WRX is like sort of that. It's that thorn in the side of cars that are sort of much more elite, right? Like it just brings the fight to things like, you know, the BMWs and the Audis, and it really gives them a run for their money.
It's a really good argument to make. I mean, there are so many arguments I've been in with people talking about, you know, which would you rather? And I kind of throw in WRX and everyone goes, oh yeah. You know, like you kind of forget about it for a minute, but then you go, oh man, I might just have a WRX. You know?
So how are you going to then bring that WRX to market if it's a more of a like unique body style? It just makes it harder to sell it for like half the price of an M3, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, because if you look at it historically, like, well, I guess it's really where the STI has been, but it's just like it gives you that kind of performance for about half the price. So when they're making it its own model, its own sort of coupe thing, I don't think that the charm really holds up. Like the charm is that it's an Impreza stuffed with motor.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that because Subarus have never been about beauty ever. They've always been a little wonky and they've always sort of been immune to styling, as I think I've said that before. And part of their charm is their robustness, their sort of rugged honesty. And in the case of WRX, it's always been a little bit ugly. And
I
don't think that you couldn't say that concept wasn't a little snarly. You know, I mean, maybe you wouldn't say ugly. It's certainly menacing and mean. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a little too good to be true.
I wouldn't use the phrase sexy for that car ever,
no.
Or the word sexy. But, you know, it's certainly more sexy than what we got in production form. I'm going back to I'm still really upset that there's no hatch WRX. And I get what Subaru said about how, you know, they decided to do one body style and just put the money in developing a great car. And they've made a great car. I get that. But, you know, you're still looking back and, you know, take rates for hatch versus sedan were 50-50 up until.
Yeah. And that's what I don't get.
Yeah.
And it's not like they don't already have the body style knocking around. They do.
Right.
Well, I think that we stand a much better chance of seeing a hatch WRX than any sort of, you know, Subaru CLS coming
out.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm almost wondering, and I think this, you know, this is one of those things that it's a question people will start to ask in a couple of years, maybe even just after this 1 year. But I think we might have to start asking Subaru again, like, do you regret, you know, not doing a hatch? Like, are people being turned away? Because every time I would talk to someone at Subaru about, you know, there's no hatchback. They just say, well, you can fold the rear seats down and put.
But that's not the
back.
Point.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I want to see?
That's not the point.
I want to see an XV Crosstrek STI.
That would be pretty awesome.
It would be kind of cool.
I think
it would be.
And I'm
cool,
wondering but if they're actually some sort of capacity issue, because the XV Crosstrek sells very well. I think it sells better than the Impreza and maybe even not by a little bit. So, I mean, I can't imagine they're capacity constrained on one body style versus another, but you never know.
Well, the Crosstrek, too, like, sucks up some because the WRX has some bespoke parts in it. Like the floor pan is thicker. I think they used that floor pan in the Crosstrek too. Or, oh, maybe the Crosstrek Hybrid is what I'm thinking of. I forget off the top of my head. But there's that car is Impreza based. So maybe once they
it's more than Impreza based. It is
an Impreza.
it's kind of like an Impreza
that prints money.
Spirit hatchback or whatever. Yeah. It just looks like
it's an AMC Impreza. Yeah.
I like it though. I love the style of it.
What's amazing is that they basically sold that car in different generations previously, and it never sold. And then they changed the name.
Sport. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they changed the name to XV Crosstrek, and all of a sudden it's a big success.
They made it a little bit different though. Like
it's
a little bit, but I think
it's a little more butch than before. I mean, the Outback Sport in the last gen, you got the the two-tone paint.
You got the two-tone bodywork, and that's about it.
And I think there was maybe like an half an inch of added ground clearance, maybe, but you get the Crosstrek now and it's got, you know, tinted rear glass, it's got big ground clearance. It's
crazy
got
looking
funky,
wheels.
Yeah, crazy looking wheels, big tires. I mean, it looks.
So actually, that's an interesting point. You know, it's like it's got these candy coated colors. It does have the flashy wheels. Like they made it leads a lot more on style than the old two tone Outback Sport, right? So that's a little bit bespoke on its bodywork, right? It's got that sort of fast hatch look to it. So maybe it's not that crazy to think that there could be a more special WRX, but I still don't see it. But maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
I still want XVSTI. You can just scrunch all the letters together. It'll be the greatest thing since
Hey, you know what?
What kind of anagram could you
XR4TI.
As Ooh. Long as it has gold wheels, I'll be happy.
But it doesn't. It's going to have, well.
You can make wacky gold versions of the ones that are on the XV. Those might be kind of interesting.
That would look
kind of
cool, actually.
All I want are gold wheels. That's it.
Krylon.
It's my thing.
A little rattle can from Walmart's. There you go.
Plastidip.
Yeah, that's right. You can.
That is the thing now.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can get the
kit. All those kids are plastidipping their wheels.
Yeah, my son that continues to threaten to do so.
Ooh,
well,
no.
Well, you can peel it right off, though, so it's not a big
deal. I understand that.
If he does it, he will be peeling it right off.
Right. Well, and I'm worried he might peel off some rust and paint with it too. Actually, there's really no rust on it, but you never know.
Yeah, you may find that there's more than you thought, and then
that is correct.
Yeah. Then you got to get him a MIG welder for Christmas and some sheet steel, so you fix the rest. Father's Day is coming.
He'll burn my house.
I want to go with Chris when he buys that stuff.
I have a feeling that's not
the Plastidip or the MIG welder.
Both. We'll get an XV Crosstrek so we can load it all up into the back.
No, you're going to take the long-term WRX.
We'll take the long-term WRX.
All right. Well, let's move on, shall we?
Sure.
The Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. Chris, you drove something actually rather interesting. I think for me, the most interesting thing is the engine, because it's going to be in something else. But this is a pretty significant vehicle that you just had a chance to. I think the review went up today, right, of the 2015 MKC?
So it did. And I went out to Santa Barbara to drive it. I only got to drive the top flight model with the new 2.3, which, as you correctly noted, is the engine going into the Mustang. I didn't really focus on the Mustang-ness of the engine so much as trying to figure out if this is something that's really competitive, that's a step above the Escape, with which it shares an awful lot of underpinnings, and if, you know, it's something that can help Lincoln dig out of its malaise.
Yeah, so what did you come away with? I mean, I think that's one of those questions that's going to remain sort of festering no matter how many reviews show up. The internet is going to be on fire with, it's just an Escape. And it seems like from your review, it's not just an Escape.
It's not just an Escape. There's a lot of differences. Obviously, the styling is completely different. It shares no sheet metal. It shares no glass with it. I mean, it's a demonstrably different car inside and out. And I think one of the things that some of the commenters were taking issue with is the quality of the interior. And I have a feeling that's down to my poor photography skills. So I apologize for that. It's actually a very rich interior. That's very nice, and I think very much in keeping with the class. Certainly better than stuff like the X3, which I recently spent a weekend driving around on One Lap of America. And actually, performance-wise, there's a lot of little things, and not just the engine, that have combined to make this a much better vehicle to drive than the Escape, which is, you know, for its type, not a slouch in any respect.
Escape is pretty good.
Yeah, it is. So this is better.
Yeah, those are good bones to base something else off of.
Yeah, it's got tighter steering. It's got a wider track. It has a all-wheel drive system that in sport mode kicks a little bit more torque toward the back end than the Escape does. I couldn't get the exact default torque splits out of them, but they did indicate that it does push more to the back in more conditions. It's got adaptive suspension. It's got all manner of active and passive safety gear.
And is that all standard though, or is that just, I mean?
No, it's not. So to be fair, the standard car comes with the 2-liter EcoBoost engine that's found in just about everything over at Ford,
which also doesn't suck
in terms of cars, which is not a bad motor.
Right.
And I didn't get the chance to drive that, but I don't think it's that much heavier than an Escape. So it should get around reasonably, in the same fashion, which is just fine. And I mean, overall, I have to say, I was cautiously optimistic, but I really like this car a lot. I don't know that it'll be, this is certainly not, people keep talking about, will this car save Lincoln? They did it with the MKZ before it, and there's no one car that's going to save this brand, but I think it's really competent in the hottest segment in the market right now. I think it's actually well-priced. People were kind of put off by the as-tested price being $50,000. On this car, which is, a significant amount of money, but it's also significantly less than everything in the class but the Acura, which lacks a lot of equipment.
Yeah, well, and I think that's Lincoln's thing across the board is that they come, I'm sure it probably has leather standard.
It does. But it has a higher grade of leather,
right?
The second trim up, which is really very nice, bridge of wear, deep soft leather, which sounds, a lot of times. I don't really see much of a difference, but you feel it, and it does feel a bit thicker, and in a soft way, not in a slap leather, a belt leather sort of way.
Right.
They're really comfortable seats. There's nice detailing on the door panels. They got rid of those damned capacitive touch switches on the center stack for the HVAC and for the radio, which were just terrible in the MKZ. And It's a really nice vehicle. I think it actually looks really good. I know, Steve, you don't really care for the way it looks.
You know what? I will say I don't care for the way it looks, but I just had an interesting revelation as we're talking about this. I literally spent the last minute staring at the lead photo. And with those are what, the 19-inch wheels or those 20s?
Those are 19s. 20s are going to be late.
It kind of almost looks like a Tiguan.
Yeah, I can see some of that in there,
and I've always thought the Tiguan was. I'm gonna get shot for this.
No, Tiguan's always.
I've always thought the Tiguan was a pretty car.
It sort of looks like a shoe a little bit.
Yeah, my issues with the MKC are just. I'm still not sold on that grille at all. And
it's a little bravada-ish. If I could use that. But I think it's as I said in the review and I've said before, I think it's the first application of this grill that works. I don't think any of the other split wing modern Lincoln grills really work, including the MKZ. I think this does, and I think it'll age pretty well. There's some really nice detailing along the side. I love the swage line up top. How it sort of diminishes and then it comes back to draw out the fenders. I really like the clamshell rear.
See, there's my issue is I think from the rear three-quarter it looks nice. The clamshell rear, I get it, and I think it's the cool thing, but I don't think Lincoln's quite done it correctly. And Chris, we were talking about this earlier. You mentioned that the Audi Q5 has this too.
Yeah.
But if you look at the cut lines on the Lincoln and then you look at the cut lines on a Q5, it's much more nicely integrated on the Q5 than it is in the Lincoln. Every time I look at the rear three-quarter of that car, the one thing that stands out more than anything is, you know, where the hatch meets the rest of the body. Like,
well, I think
I can't
like,
not
the,
see that.
On the Q5, it sort of goes around the lights a little bit more.
Yeah, like, it does. It's just, it's a better integration.
Yeah, with the Lincoln here, you know, they're stretching the lights all the way across the back glass or the back hatch. So there's not really a way to sort of scallop
them
out.
Well, they could have put the cut line directly up against the end of the taillight, which they don't do.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the issue. I don't actually mind that.
Yeah, that's what the Q5 does, and I think it just works better there because it doesn't – it's not this, you know, head-to-toe cut line that goes down the entire side of the car. You know, the having it end or meet right at the taillight on the Q5, you know, takes some of that away. And it doesn't taper into that rear three-quarter panel as much. I think it's cool, but I think the Audi does a much, much better job.
Yeah, but the Audi is much, much more expensive when you get it.
Well, yeah, I'm not getting too, right? into that. I'm,
like,
and I've always liked the way the Q5 looks, and I'm not suddenly going to tell you that I don't.
No, it's a good car.
But I think, you know, in profile, I like the way that the Lincoln looks better because it's got more surface definition. And I think it looks really good. I understand it won't be for everybody. And I think that's completely fine. But I'm, for the first time, I'm a little optimistic about Lincoln. And I've always said to everybody on staff and everybody that asks about it from the readership, it's way, way, way too early to say Lincoln is dead. And that's really easy to do. And it's really lazy to say it. We need 10 or 15 years, like we've given Cadillac, to really say where it's going to be, especially now that they're investing in China, which I think they're late on. And I think that's going to be harder than they think. I mean, if we look, Cadillac's been playing in China, you know, wiffle ball league for the last 10 years, and they really haven't gotten anywhere. They're just starting to really, you know, put some models in there. So it's going to be an uphill battle, but I like what I see here.
Well, I mean, like in China, part of the thing is like a lot of the good partners are gone. So that's a little difficult to partner up because you must. It's the rules. So to see them make that investment in China now, like, I don't know. Is it like a Buick thing? Is there enough cachet in Lincoln to give them a lift in China and make them an aspirational product?
Well, I think that what they're – it may not be enough cachet. It may be an absence of baggage because that's the problem that it suffers from here, where everybody knows that they haven't done much, you know, in decades. And people don't really remember them for their great styling anymore and their great vehicles that they had, you know, back in the 50s and 60s. They're just way too far back there. But the nice thing about going into a new market – as an American brand with history, is that you can sort of blot out the unfortunate parts, and you don't have to talk in, you know, in full. You don't have to show all the cards, all the cars that you've ever released. I saw this when I was in China at a Chevrolet dealership, where they're celebrating cars that we would never even celebrate. They had just gotten the then new Malibu. And they were showing like 70s Malibus, you know, that were gold and brown colors, you know, the old press photos with, you know, the beach ball and the girl in the bikini and all that. And that's something that we as Americans know better. We would never celebrate that in our, you know, they were terrible cars. And, you know, the Chinese are, you know, seeing this car company anew. And, you know, they're getting sold a line, a little story about the brand history, and they might think that we look upon those very fondly because, hey, look at those photographs.
Yeah. Look at those photographs. I do have a question. Now, I'm looking at the pictures of the interior, right? The the push-button shifter seems to be a bone of contention among some people. And one of the things is, oh, you can't operate it without looking. A, I don't think that's true once you get used to it. And B, it cleans up the center stack. What did you think of that? How was it to operate?
I mean, it works fine, and it's less fiddly than like the similar version on Aston Martin's where they run it across. So it does work okay. It's within easy reach, and I get that it clears up, you know, the lower area. But there, you know, you could have run a stock and done the same thing. Not that I necessarily would favor that solution, but it's to me, it's a little fiddly still. And I actually do think you can you would have a harder time operating this by feel. You know, if they had taken the time to put like little detents in the D button or in the P, that would be something your finger could find.
Like the little things on your keyboard to find the home row.
Yeah, the little braille dots. They didn't do that.
And the other thing that I sort of looked at too was the all the little buttons. Like you talked about how they don't have touch capacitive buttons and stuff, but they sure got a lot of tiny ones down there under the.
They are totally usable.
Are they?
Yeah, I mean they're really not that many. If you look at them, what you're probably going to be using is you're going to be using the fan speed and the temperature control on your side, and maybe you're going to use the you know the defroster button. The extra buttons toward the bottom are all for your seats.
Huh. So overall, your impression of the MKC is that it's really good. It's really competitive. I mean, you got to admit, too, like it starts to push like $50,000 and you're in a class where, you know, the X3 you compare it to, that's a bigger vehicle. And that tops like you the X3
S-Drive. It's a bigger vehicle, sure, but you can get an X1 that's more expensive with less stuff in it.
Right. And the X1 is a little
smaller.
Because that's right in the middle.
The X1 is very small. I think it's a reasonably good value play. Obviously, they're going to have to take people that are not really aware of the challenges of the brand or that want to try something a little different, that are taken by the looks of it, and possibly want to buy American. It's certainly not an easy sell because there's simply not the level of prestige that you would have versus almost anything else in the class. This is a Challenger car now. It's priced like it. It's a bit under. You know, if you're looking for a premium brand or, you know, you at a value price, the toughest thing is going to be the segment leader, and that's the Acura because it's quite a bit less fully loaded. You just don't get as much stuff.
Right. Well, and I bet the Acura, too, the interior of the Lincoln looks – I know that we talked about it a little bit, and it's really hard to get a sense of it from pictures, but – knowing what I know about, you know, the Ford interiors and looking at the pictures, like there is some really nice detailing, and those are the things that act as like those Easter eggs, right? As you have the car for a while, you notice, like you talked about the matte finish wood trim. First of all, matte finish is the thing now, and it's pretty nice. And the way it sort of scallops out, you know, it's got like this concave thing to it, you know, versus being just a plank.
I mean, it's a nicely turned out interior, and you know, frankly, the one that you see in photographs is black, and that's always a little bit harder to photograph. And I think that the, you know, the tan colors look a little bit better. There's a handful of different interior schemes, but overall I think it's a nice interior. I think the interior is actually nicer than the BMW. I think it's pretty close to the Audi except for the center stack tech. You know, you have my Lincoln Touch versus, you know, the latest Audi system with the, I can't remember if they have the gesture recognition in that, in the Q5 yet. They might not.
See, that's actually a place where I feel like, and everybody loves MMI, I feel like my Ford Touch, my Lincoln Touch might actually be a little quicker to pick up than the MMI system. I mean, the MMI system's pretty deep, but I'm not sure which one I'd prefer. I'd have to play with them both sort of back to back and see. But that becomes a game of inches, wouldn't you say? The sort of the tech. I mean,
the problem is just getting people to consider this car, to know that it's out there. And one interesting thing that I found out is I think the description that one of the executives said is we're going to hold our powder about marketing this car. It's just trickling into dealers right now, so you might expect to see a big advertising campaign on TV and all of that. But they are going to be doing it a little bit differently because they were burned really hard with the launch of the MKZ, where their production problems did not help, you know, their sales, because they had put in place all this marketing, including I think a Super Bowl commercial and all this stuff, and they had no cars and dealers.
Yeah.
And what they realize is when they're launching a car at this time of year, there's no big summer shows. So they're going to be doing like, you know, online stuff and movie theater and maybe some smartphone type of deals. But you won't see an advertising push for a little while until they make sure that they've got all the cars and dealers, and that there's going to be people in front of the television set watching.
Yeah, well, that's okay, because if their marketing is as bad for this as it was for the MKZ, they just don't run it.
And that is a big problem for this brand.
The ones I always see now are the ones with the sign above, like a Lexus, and especially for the hybrid, you know.
Oh,
like,
I hate those.
Like, but I, you know, do. What? I
at
don't.
Least it's clear and it's not hiding, because that is the primary competitor, and it's just saying, hey, look, you know, we're cheaper and we do better in this area, which I think most people wouldn't think about, and I imagine that most people that are looking at like a Lexus ES would probably never consider MKZ. Maybe it gives them reason for pause. I don't think they're that well done. I think they're a little like,
oh, they're terrible. But
they're at least clear.
Yeah,
I mean, like they're not conceptual. Honda
they're
ads,
just hard,
you know?
Facts.
Yeah,
yeah, they're practical.
And the campaigns before that were with the guy from Mad Men, which is just like, enough, stop, just please, you know, just do the Cadillac thing, license a Led Zeppelin song, make some pretty stuff, and bam, there you go. That probably won't work either, so who knows. I honestly think, though, like, one of the things that we've left out with this is a comparison to Lexus, and that may actually be its most direct competitor when you consider who looks at the RX and where they sit in the market versus, you know, Lincoln, and who currently buys Lincoln. So
it could be, but the RX is significantly larger.
Yeah, it is. But I'd be interested in seeing that, especially with lease rates and stuff like that. I do want to get to, before we get off of it, I want to talk about the 2.3 liter engine and how that is, because that's the biggest EcoBoost 4 there is right now. Is it a good time, or did it leave you sort of underwhelmed?
No, I enjoyed it. I mean, I felt like it didn't have you know, crazy amounts of power, but it definitely had a nice torque delivery. And I've got to imagine that the MKC, especially all loaded up, is going to be hundreds of pounds heavier than the Mustang. So I think it bodes well, especially if you have a, you know, a transmission with gear ratios for performance. I think we should all be quite encouraged. The one thing I will tell you about this engine and this application is the soundtrack is boring. but I think that's by design. It's not intrusive. It's not horribly buzzy. It's not grating. It's just sort of there. And they're going to have to retune that. And of course, you know, the engine's going to be mounted a different way. And so there's all sorts of changes that are going to come to the 2.3 in order for it to be in the Mustang.
I think it's going to be probably maybe a little bit more powerful. Those numbers might actually rise a little bit when it gets in the Mustang. Who knows?
Yeah, I would guess that they would try and keep the Mustang the highest horsepower application of a given engine shared with something else. That just makes sense to me.
And my thought, too, is it's going to be a little bit looser exhaust-wise, so it'll have a little bit more growl to it. But we'll see. I'm just excited that they're actually building it and it's out in something. And, you know, hopefully the MKC will lift Lincoln up to the point where Steve really wants one.
I'm already going to buy six.
You know, one in each color. I get it.
Well, I need one day a week to drive the WRX.
That's so. Right. Well, you want to keep the miles off it.
Right.
So, all right. Well, next topic, I think, should be another American car that has lit up the internet, the Corvette Z06. We found out today or yesterday that it's going to have 650 horsepower, 650 pound-feet of torque, and we got hundreds and hundreds of comments. Some very interesting.
So I've got to say, you know, I'm spending the week with the Corvette right now. I'm just about to be done with it. And this news came out while I had the Corvette in my possession. And I remember there's been a couple times where I'm driving it around and I'm going kind of hard on the Corvette and I'm having a great time with it. And I'm just thinking, how in the hell is this car going to handle 200 more horsepower than the normal Stingray? 200. That's
insane. I think it'll handle it pretty well.
Yeah.
I am so beyond excited for this car.
It's pretty badass. It amuses me reading through the press release from GM. You know, they're saying, compared with other supercar engines, the LT4, which is the new supercharged 6.2, is a veritable fountain of low-end torque.
I love that Royce calls this car the Big Nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
Like, that's my favorite thing.
But their point is like, well, the V12-powered Ferrari F12 Berlinetta, for example, produces about 28% less torque, and it comes higher, you know, it's not achieved till 6,000 RPM. but that kind of misses the point. Like, if you have 625 pound-feet of torque at, like, 2,000 RPM like this car does, it may not be any faster because it won't be able to hook up.
Right.
So
I've actually heard that the Z06 won't actually be faster. It'll just going to be a hell of a lot quicker. Because you know,
that makes the head spin. You're going to have to explain that a little bit.
Well, I mean, you know, the difference between quickness and fast is velocity. And
this
quickness
is
a measurement
thing
of time.
To talk about,
it is my favorite thing because people confuse the two all the time. And I know that it's,
well, because it sounds like you're saying it's not going to be A, it's going to be A.
Yeah.
No, there's totally a difference, Chris.
But it's like
on
the difference between motor and engine and how that's sort of been bastardized over the years. But one is a measurement of time, one is a measurement of velocity and speed. And that's the difference. So this thing, probably because of its aero package and the tremendous amount of downforce that it has, it probably won't be appreciably faster at the top end.
Okay, so it won't have a
higher
top speed.
What it's going to be is quicker.
So right. it will tear off a 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds. Is, you know, in our post we said if it doesn't.
Yeah,
do that,
assuming
we'll
it can hook up and right. You know, mm-hmm. By all rights it should, especially with that downforce.
I cannot imagine that thing on cold tires. Oh man.
Well, that's the nice thing about that. The Corvette, they pioneered that technology to tell if the tires are warm, right?
Yeah.
That's a life preserver. Just thought it was neat.
It's important. It's really important.
Well, and yeah. I just keep thinking of the last time that I was in the Mustang GT500, and I was on a GT500 on cold tires, and that has about the same horsepower.
That's the 662 horsepower?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember this car in those conditions.
And it was a nightmare. I would literally pull out of my driveway at the end of the street, and I would, you know, not like completely light them up in a big plume, but I would spin the tires just to warm them up because it was just a complete handful. And it was just frankly lousy to drive in the fall with wet leaves and all that. It was just too much. Now I remember Jeremy had that car out in Arizona and he said it was great. And of course they've got perfect pavement and dry roads and all of that. And it probably hooks up like the Dickens out there. But
yeah, I remember having that GT500 around the same time as you. And I looked back on it and remembering it, every single time I went to turn right onto Woodward out of my old apartment complex, I never did it without having the back end just go whoom, like yeah. Right off to the side.
Like that's a car you could really hurt yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
So how quickly are we going to wait until we see the sort of first Chevy Z06 crash? Maybe that's not where we should go with that thought.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not going to be a handful because it's, well, I mean, it'll be a little bit of a handful, but it's going to be a whole package. That's the thing that you were saying about the Corvette, right? So they're going to tweak the suspension to deal with this, and it's going to be quite a terror on the track, and it's going to give a lot of very expensive cars. They're going to see it in their rearview mirror. If not, they're going to be looking at those taillights that everybody loves.
Well, yeah, the Z06 is engineered, you know, to be able to handle all that power. It's got a lot that's been done to it. Some you can see, some you can't. That's going to make it so that it can handle it. Whereas the GT500 really, to me, has always just felt like a Mustang with a giant engine.
That's exactly what it is.
Because yeah, it's not nearly as, you know, focused and honed and tuned to be able to really handle this. Maybe that will be the case with the next one. But the Z06, I mean, every single one of those upgrades that you see on it versus the Stingray is functional.
So this leaves me with a question too, though. Like, we got the Z06. Do you think they're going to do a ZR1?
No.
I mean, is that like ever on the table? Because the Z06 is like way ahead, supplanting the ZR1 from the last gen.
Chevy already pretty much told us, in fact, that there are no plans for a ZR1.
Well, so that is that. And it's, what is it?
I wouldn't rule it out, though, to be perfectly honest with you.
I wouldn't rule it out, but
developing it right now. But these cars tend to have a pretty long life cycle.
Yeah. It's kind of like...
I don't
like,
know where they go from here, though.
Right. And that really was, I guess, my thought is, like, if you do a ZR1, what is it going to be?
A million horsepower.
and nobody can really... So it'll be a hybrid.
14-speed manual.
It'll be a hybrid.
It'll have six wheels. It'll be an XP Crosstrek STI.
Yeah, I mean, the LT4, too, is the interesting thing to me is, like, they went from a 7-liter engine down to a 6.2. They really tweaked the blower. The blower has smaller elements in it. So, yeah, so it can spin a lot faster. So it's really like this is the state of the small block engine art. And that engine just still amazes me. It's tiny. It's especially now, too, it's got dry sump. So it really tucks way back in there. It's the Corvette thing is like every time there's a new generation, it spends a year or two being just completely badass. And it's definitely still that way to me. I don't know. I'm very impressed with it. So we'll see how it does on the thing in the comments that I noticed was like, everybody's comparing it to like Porsches and stuff. And I'm like, it's going to smoke a Porsche for the money. Mm-hmm. What Porsche competes with it? Kind of. Maybe the 918. Well, no, I was going to say, yeah.
But even then.
The 918 is one of the few cars that's actually more powerful than it. But do you think that it's like legitimately it takes the Corvette from supercar, from sports car to supercar?
Totally.
I think the only thing that's going to stand in the way of that among all the bench racers is probably going to be the top speed. But other than that, yeah.
Yeah, top speed.
In track times, like, you know, road courses. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Top Nürburgring time.
Yeah. I mean, the Nürburgring thing is like.
Oh, God. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, say what you will. It's important for whatever reason.
It is.
It's a development benchmark kind of track because of its variety of, you know.
It's a series of videos that we will publish. Because they'll be awesome.
Yeah.
See, we used to have car posters, and now. I think people just refer to old videos.
Yeah.
Go back and watch the Nürburgring video. Go back and watch Jeremy Clarkson make funny mouth faces in the aerial at him.
I think that was my introduction to Top Gear. Was him saying his epiglottis is full of bees. Wasn't the car that they took around the Nürburgring, the ZR1, wasn't that an automatic as well?
I feel like it might have been.
Yeah.
I think so.
Weird, far into minutia. So let's hit up the Q&A and we'll split. And so one question that we probably don't have an answer to, but I want to just get right out there is why is it taking Honda so long to come up with a redesigned pilot? Because the MDX has been redone. So why do we have a new MDX and not a new pilot?
It's coming.
I would say probably because the pilot is still, you know, popular.
They just came out with that super awesome special edition. No, really, there's a pilot coming, and it's going to be on the MDX bones.
Which are just, damn good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to it's gonna take a second. I think they want the MDX to get out
just,
there. And,
Honda's probably, just like, one sec.
It'll probably be a model year thing, and Honda's really good about keeping designs under wraps, and I think we'll see it.
If I honestly had to guess, I would say 2016 Pilot.
Yeah, that's one thing you never really see, too, is, like, Honda spy shots. We've seen some stuff with, like, the NSX and stuff, but really, like...
You usually see them, though, when they're pretty close to being done.
Right. And with the NSX, that's a car they've had to bring to a lot of different places to, you know, to the Nürburgring and all of that. The MDX probably doesn't need to do that.
No.
I think honestly, everything needs to do that.
I think we'll see the Pilot in for the 16 model year. Like, if we don't see or hear anything about a new one in 2015 calendar year, I'll be shocked. Really.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good bet. I mean, that's one of the oldest things in there. What I want to know is if they're going to make a Ridgeline off the MDX platform.
Well, they said they're going to do another Ridgeline and that it was going away for, what, a year or two, but they were going to come back with something else.
That's doubling down. I remember sort of the arguments about the Ridgeline even like 2 or 3 years ago, just like... I think that's a great weekend warrior truck, and I'm probably one of the few that likes it to a certain
degree. No, I was – it was funny. I was driving home from the office today with Erin, and we were behind a Ridgeline, and she started going on about how much she – like, she's like, oh, those are so ugly. Like, why would you ever buy that? And I'm like, I kind of like it.
It has a trunk in the pillow.
Jeremy Korsanewski hates the Rift.
Yeah, but I was like, it's actually kind of functional. And I'm like, and I said, and it's, you know, it's the Accord platform underneath. She was like, oh my God, it's the Accord. I'm like, the Accord is good.
Well, and it's not even the current Accord, right?
Right, so, but still, it's like, it's a couple generations. Kind of a good car.
Well, I mean, for people that don't really need heavy duty,
it's not a good truck, but it's clever.
I think the problem is that the fuel economy is not there, and that they didn't spend the money to update the interior. So those are the two things. It's certainly not at all competitive now. The only people it's selling to are previous rich line owners that just want another new one that doesn't smell bad inside. But it's an interesting vehicle, and I'm glad somebody's still trying to mine the unusual pickup niche. And they promised one within 2 years with a press release, not, you know, some rumor through through some UK production or publication within 2 years ago. And that was back in December. So,
yeah,
we got a year and a half to wait.
So it wasn't like, wasn't I love those UK things. They're just like they make crap up. They're like, yeah, well, yeah, let's make it like 7 years out. We can say whatever the heck we want.
Yeah. It's one of those things. Well, you know, they will ask if, you know, Volkswagen is going to bring over Škoda ever to North America. And they'd be like, well, we can never say never, but, you know, we're definitely not looking at that. And it's that, well, you're telling me there's still a chance, that kind of, you know.
It's never coming to the U.S. We're just leaving it at that. All right. So another question that sort of piqued my interest here was why am I so obsessed with sending people to driving school? Do I really think that people will change their habits just by being forced to attend a class or two before getting or renewing their licenses? This is David in Virginia, and he says he trusts the safety technology a lot more than the typical American driver. I think you misunderstand what I mean when I say driving school. I don't mean classroom. I mean get out on the track and drive and, you know, go in a skid car. Because I think you guys, you know, both of you have spent some time in controlled environments, and you can attest to how quickly things happen and how you can't learn that any other way than experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point I'm trying to make about driving school. And I don't know, I get in the cars with all the safety technology. I shut a lot of that stuff off. I don't know. Do you guys leave it on or do you shut it off as well?
Most of the time I leave it on. I mean, I might turn off some particularly annoying lane departure warning systems, or if I have the freedom of having a car on a track that I've gotten comfortable with, I'll you know, if I feel like it's got predictable responses, I will turn things off, or certainly, you know, loosen the e-nannies a little bit, you know, with the sport mode or max sport mode. But I think they're there for a reason, and they benefit most people. So on the street, I don't tend to turn most of them off. But I think you're 100% correct. I really do see, especially with young people, when they go to performance driving classes, that it improves their understanding of vehicle dynamics. You know, things like a skid car. Kids don't really get to experience that until they're in a skid, and then it's too late. They don't understand what's happening.
Right. And that's the point, too. I don't mean, you know, track like, you know, go out to Lime Rock or Willow Springs or Laguna Seca or something. Like, no, just a parking lot with a skid car or with the wet down part of the track or something like that. You need to experience it and get over like how much it freaks out your inner ear and stuff like that, and just see what's going on. And so that's what I mean. And I think that it is really helpful, even just to sort of, you know, calm you down. I know it would have been helpful for me when I was first starting out. I wouldn't have had to learn the hard way. But oh well. The safety stuff to me, it's kind of like I want to be alert, and I want to pay attention to driving. I think traction control is really good, but the other stuff tends to sort of like, I don't know. I don't want to rely on it. I want to look and actually check. I don't want to rely on like a light telling me that something's in my blind spot. So
I hope people still look.
Yeah,
with those lights.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of people with or without the lights that don't. Usually because they have a phone pressed up on the side of their head. It's awesome. I passed a cop today with a phone up to the side of his face. It's great. He had tinted windows, really dark, so couldn't really see. All right, so how long do you guys think we'll have to wait for an EV car with a 200-mile range that's like under $30,000? 2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Under $30,000, is that before or after incentives?
Let's say legit under 30.
Between 5 and 10, closer to the 10.
And with like, so with the, what is that, still $7,500 kind of incentive thing that they put on cars, is that still going on?
Yeah, I think that could be within 5 years.
Yeah. I think we'll see.
How long is it going to take Tesla to make that, the model whatever, not E?
Well, would you settle for something less than two? Would you settle for like 150, 180?
I mean, I'm not the market. I'm not the guy buying that.
Oh, so. I would love an electric car with 150-mile range. That would mean I could get to work and back.
I mean, EVs are fun, but...
EVs are awesome.
I still can't plug one in.
You can plug it in on 110. You just kind of, you'll go to work every other day.
Yeah. I'll just run the extension cord down from the window.
Like a true New Yorker.
Yeah, and then you get to calculate the voltage drop, and yeah, mm-hmm. Then you figure out how long it's actually.
And everybody putting a power strip on the end of your power cord.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and every now and then, like you'll watch the lights dim and your microwave will, you know, it'll blink off and the clock will reset and stuff. And, you know, yeah. Anyway, all right. So trying to decide between a 2009 G8 GT and a 2011 SHO. Let's get back to performance instead of EVs. Any thoughts would be appreciated. G8 GT.
I mean, I would rather have the G8 GT for
sure.
Like there's no question. You know, it certainly won't feel quite as up to date, but those are pretty close. So
yeah.
I'm going with the older car. Yeah.
Wow. We were unanimous.
We're usually unanimous.
No, that never happens.
If there's a GTI involved, we're unanimous because I'm right.
Can I go back and argue for the SHO just to start crap?
No.
You can try. It's not going to work.
I'm not into it. The G8 drives the proper wheels, and it's actually probably lighter. And, well, the SHO drives all the wheels. I don't know. I'm going to go around in circles, and it's not going to be compelling. All right, the Z06. We talked about the Z06. Will that steal the show from the GTR as the best-performing vehicle at a reasonable price? Or has the Stingray already done that?
I think the Stingray may have already done that, honestly. Especially considering, you know, how much money that leaves left over for you to pour into modifications, you know, to go catch the GTR and on what few circumstances it couldn't already naturally keep up.
Yeah, I think the GTR is kind of a different thing, too, though. Like, I don't know how many people cross shop a GTR with a Corvette, and maybe I'd be surprised if I actually, you know, looked that up, but they're kind of two different things, wouldn't you say?
I would say, you know, psychographically, you're probably right. They're both performance at all cost sort of cars, and now we're in the weird position where the Corvette clearly has the much nicer interior, even though it doesn't have rear seats the way the GTR does.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not hard to have a nicer interior than the GTR. I mean,
right. The Versa does.
that is not
well.
True.
I mean, other than this, well, it's not that far off either, Dan. It's really not. The seats and stuff. Yes, the touch points, like, you know, where your butt sits, where your feet hit, and where the wheel is. Yes, that's definitely much better. But there's a lot of horrible plastics and such going on in the GTR.
Yeah, there are. It's also loud.
Yeah, but it's good loud. It's not as good loud as maybe Corvette loud, but the GTR has that weird clanking at idle, like the transmission sort of just like.
Yeah, it always. I think Zach had the best description of it. It sounds like there's a screwdriver loose somewhere in the car.
Yeah,
that's eventually going to cost you lots and lots of money.
No, I mean I did a long haul in a GTR last fall, and man, was that not great. It's a wonderful car, and it's what it can do is amazing, and it's like a video game inside, but 4 hours in the rain at night in the middle of nowhere, just not the best.
How would you feel about doing that in a Corvette, though?
Corvette's more comfortable.
Even a touchy one like the Z06, like with that much power underfoot in the rain?
Well, we don't know.
Well, we don't know, but I'm saying like a Stingray.
Yeah.
Is
wide tires are, and standing water are just an evil combination.
Yeah.
That's true.
I had the Camaro recently, and I had to deal with that, the ZL1, and it was just terrifying.
Yeah. Either way, I'd still take it because it'd be a story for the ages. And I mean, when else do you get to drive those things? Because I'm not independently wealthy enough to afford them. So
yeah, it was cool. I will admit to I took the long way home from that trip and driving the GTR through these little tiny one stoplight towns in northern Michigan, where I had stopped to get gas at one point, and this crowd amassed around the car. Because, I mean, they had never even heard of the GTR. Like, they didn't know that was a thing. And so this car shows up, and, it looks like it arrived from the year 3000
to those people. Did you feel like was the scene of Back to the Future where, like, Marty McFly, plays like he's an alien?
It was so, like, the Flintstones meet the Jetsons that I felt like a superstar to these. Like, I was their new god. It was crazy.
And did you lead the funeral procession in the GTR?
Yeah, I did.
Isn't that why you went up there?
Yeah, yeah. I had to go to a funeral.
That is a hilarious thing to take to
you. I told the Nissan people about it, they were just dying of laughter.
There's a story there. You led a funeral procession with a GTR?
Yeah.
Why?
In northern Michigan.
In northern Michigan. Because someone died and I had to go to a funeral.
No, I understand
what
funeral
procession
is for. Why did you lead the procession though? Like,
because I had a bright red GTR and everyone went, oh, well, clearly.
He just pulled into the middle of the intersection and revved and everybody else stopped.
That's such a Michigan thing. Like, it's such a car state. Like, oh, you with the red car. Yeah, no, you're first. Like,
well, but not a GTR.
I was in a town where they had never seen a GTR before, and I just immediately pulled it right up behind the hearse.
That's awesome. I hope whoever passed away had a long, fruitful life, and this was their sort of last, final, final send off in style.
Right.
So, to your Aunt Bertha or whoever it was,
B.
Rest in peace. Well, I'll pour out some transmission fluid.
Right.
All right.
I've got some extra motor oil laying around. I'll just dump that on the ground.
Nice. Dump it in the storm sewer. Cause
I always do.
No, that's bad advice. Don't ever do that. No, don't do that. You're going to kill turtles or something.
I don't like turtles.
Yeah, but turtles like you.
Yeah, you probably do. They're just so slow.
Someone has to.
Yeah. They're fast in water, actually. They're pretty badass in water.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have clearly devolved into the Turtle Blog podcast. So we should wrap it up and call it a night. Chris Pockert and Stephen Ewing, I want to say thanks for joining us on, what is this, episode 384?
Woo!
What are you doing for episode 400?
I don't know yet. What am I doing for episode 400? Do you have anything in mind?
I don't know.
We should plan something. We should give away a car.
I think you should have, a lot of the past luminaries on. I think there should be a Shank, a Bowman, a Neff.
Yeah, we should do Blast from the Past Autoblog.
We could do that. We could do it as sort of like segments, too, so we don't necessarily have to try to corral everyone live, which is always entertaining.
Yeah. No.
You should figure out what week that's going to be and see if there's any, cool venue to be at tied to, motorsports or something.
My house.
You live.
All come to my house. Then I don't have to go anywhere. No, that's a good idea. We should actually get on that.
Maybe for episode 400, Dan, I will get you that Gallant you've been asking for.
I think that we should get one and give it away.
That you've been asking for since episode 4.
I was asking for a Gallant when they were still being built, man. And you couldn't come through for me, Steve.
It's because they refused.
That's all right. I will settle for a Corvette, please.
Okay.
We'll make it happen. I'll call my fleet guy. I'm gonna see him tomorrow, actually. Cause
I'll call Bugsy.
Yeah, you can call Bugsy. Right. I'm gonna see Bugsy tomorrow because I'm gonna see the Chrysler 200.
Oh yeah, say hey to Kathy and Bugsy for me.
I will. And I saw the Genesis not too long ago down at Bugsy's too. That car's awesome. Mm-hmm. By the way, the new Genesis, very very good.
I have yet to drive either, but I'm sure they will be coming sometime.
I drove it. I want to know what you have to say about it because you have the sort of. The bogey on the European luxury cars. I would be very interested in hearing your impressions.
Well, Chris has a Genesis on its way.
I was super impressed with the Genesis.
Excellent.
So
good.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it when it arrives. And with that, it's episode 384. We are done.
In the books.
Good night.
The Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. You can subscribe to the Autoblog Podcast in iTunes, send us an email at podcast@autoblog.com, or find us on Twitter at Autoblog Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.